Hi there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Erin from Everlearning, Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, and myself, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, consent-based learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. Today it's myself, Erin, and Ashley, and we have Kendall with us today from Spark to Flame Home Learning. So hello, Kendall.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, so nice to have you back. And I got that right, right? Spark to Flame Home Learning?
Yeah.
Excellent. So Kendall was with us once before. We chatted about community back in episode 15. So we'll also link that in the show notes. And then, would just very much encourage anybody to listen to that episode if they haven't, because that was a good one. And I feel like, I don't know, Ashley, we've been talking about community again. So we may talk about that topic again. Kendall, we might be knocking at your door again.
No problem.
Yeah. So today, though, we are talking about strewing and sort of like the nuances of strewing, or kind of the deeper practice of strewing. And I think we'll probably get into how it evolves over time as well. So we'll kind of see where the conversation goes. I thought maybe to start with, in case people aren't familiar with the term, we could just talk for a minute about what it is, because, you know, it has its own definition, and then there's sort of like a homeschool version of it. So I was just looking, so just like dictionary.com, for example, the technical definition of strewing is to scatter or spread things untidily over a surface or area. So over time, it's sort of become a pretty common term in the homeschool world, and I think particularly unschooling, but definitely people of all sort of philosophies do talk about strewing. My understanding is it sort of evolved from a comment at one point that Sandra Dodd, a unschooler who's kind of been at this for many years, was talking about the practice of sort of leaving interesting things out and about for her children, just kind of exposing them and I guess showing them different opportunities and kind of leaving out different possibilities. So I did find on her website, so I'll link this as well, people were asking. So there was sort of a message board, and people were wondering, like, what exactly is strewing and how do you do it? Because I think that's another thing that'll be interesting to talk about today. Kind of find out what each of us think about that. So this person, the person who was asking the question, said, I think it's leaving material of interest around for our children to discover. Is there more to it? And Sandra responded, she said, that's it. She said, I said it years ago in a discussion board, and the visual stuck. What I was referring to was leaving things around and changing them out. So she was talking in that example about, like, you know, just putting things out on a table, maybe, or putting them in a place that you know your children are going to come to find them. But she actually continued on, which was interesting to me because I had never read this part from her. And she says, there's another element to strewing, which isn't physically strewing, but involves instead taking the children out and about with the idea of them seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching things they might not have come upon otherwise, and that you can't lay casually about the house. So that's definitely something we've all talked about, that strewing can be beyond just sort of leaving out a book that you think your kids might like, or a puzzle. There can be a lot of different ways of strewing. And so I would have said, when I first heard the term, I mean, I've been hearing it for a lot of years, but I wouldn't have originally said that I was much of a strewer. Like, I don't ever remember thinking, I'm going to strew some things for the kids, or, you know, what am I going to strew next week? I've never really done that with any kind of intention. But when I started thinking about it over the years, I realized that depending on how you define strewing, if I think about it just as inviting, offering them something, whether that's like, you know, an invitation to go somewhere, like an opportunity, or whether it's even sending a link to a website I think they might enjoy. Those are all different ways that we can think about strewing if we kind of broaden that definition a little bit. So I would love to hear what either one of you kind of think just off the top of your head when you're thinking about what it looks like for you and for your family.
Yeah, sure. I'll go first. Thanks, Kendall. And thanks, Erin. I'm excited for today's topic because it's always a fun one to chat about. And I think it's really nice. Like, I've always enjoyed hearing what other people's experiences are with strewing. And I've actually talked, obviously, to like other homeschool parents about strewing and what that kind of looks like for them. And there's definitely a lot of similarities, but there's the fun part is listening to the differences. And I've talked to, not often, but a couple kids a few different times. It's kind of come up without using the word strewing with the kids, but I could tell that that's what they were telling me about, you know, something that someone gave them or left them or an invitation or something. So I always enjoy hearing what that's like for other people. But I liked how you shared the definitions, Erin, because I think that that's helpful. And what I first thought of strewing, I mean, I think it was similar to what you said. And now what we do, I realize there's so much more to strewing than just, well, from my experience, I'm not just referring to materials that I leave out, but it's definitely experiences and also like ideas and conversations, I think, as well. But for me, it is kind of, it has helped with my deschooling process. Like, I think early on when I first started strewing, or maybe like intentionally strewing, because I guess I always have, it helped me relax in, because it let me pay attention to like what my kids would pick up, what they would choose to pick up and get into, and what they would ignore. So there's definitely a lot of just, yeah, leaving things out, whether it's something new I brought in the home, or especially when they were younger, but I can still do it now. But like when they were younger, I would just pull out toys that had kind of got forgotten, and I would maybe put it in a different space, or like lay it out on the table or the floor and see if it would get touched or it wouldn't. And it was always different. And now I still do that type of stuff. I mean, maybe toys a little less, because my youngest is, I mean, they still play with toys. They're 10 and 8, but now it's like definitely like more like puzzles that we can do together or that they might do together. You know, the books have changed that I've left. But what's really been cool as they get older, and we'll probably talk about more of this later too, but some of the other strewing things, like the digital strewing, I think, Erin, that's what you had put in the notes, like referred to it as digital strewing. And it's neat because like we'll just send, yeah, links or pictures or funny things. And it will still often be me sending it to them, but my oldest, I don't know if my youngest has yet. My youngest will bring me stuff and show me stuff, so that's similar. But my oldest now will start to send me links to, I think the last thing was a song that they liked, and they shared that. So it's neat seeing it come back as well, which I'm not surprised that it's the digital strewing that's come up with that one. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited to get into all the different things. It helps me. I actually will write down, like, you guys know this, cause I'll share it a lot in the community. I like to write down and share what we strewed and like the variety. And I write it for myself in my notes, because it just, I don't know, sometimes it just feels like you're not doing enough, or you're not offering enough, or you're not, you know, they don't have enough. Especially if you might be hearing, like, sometimes I know my two will be like, I'm bored, I don't know what to do. And you're like, oh, that's, you know, we kind of be like, what are we not offering? But when I write it down, I'm always amazed at, especially if you include a lot of it, like some of it's really easy to write down, like what book you left or what link you set or something like that. But I've started including like what conversations I've maybe brought up, or different ideas, And it can be simple things like, who wants to build a fort today? Well, I strewed that idea. Which then actually that makes me realize that they probably strew things for each other and for us a lot more than what I realize, because it doesn't have to be big, complicated things. It can be really super simple things too. But it's how we spend our time. And I think it's really helpful with unschooling too. Even when I'm talking about it with other people, like what do our days look like and stuff, it can be helpful to talk about how we leave stuff, how we present stuff, and then getting into like the part of how then they get to choose and they have the autonomy on what they pick up or what they engage with and what they choose to leave. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like what both of you had to say. I think overall, if I tried to summarize what strewing looks like for us, it's like looking for opportunities to bring joy and curiosity and connection to our lives. So like it's a lot of different elements going on. But it's interesting, Erin, that you mentioned the definition, because I can remember coming across the term a few years ago and looking it up and having that definition of, you know, the untidy placing of things on a surface. And that's, it's interesting to me that the word itself invokes like a sense of carelessness or accidental, like the newspapers were strewn all around the floor, or there sometimes it gives the sense of randomness. So like leaves strewn across a path. Whereas when I came across the term, I'm like, oh, this is something I can get on board with as like an active thing I'm doing very intentionally and very thoughtfully. And then I'm like, oh wait, like the word itself is kind of indicating random or by chance, or that sneaky element to leaving things around as enticing the children to be involved with them. But yeah, strewing for me always felt more of like an active thing I was doing, even though it didn't necessarily then get accompanied with expectations for what or how they would interact with the thing. It still did feel quite like exciting for me and very thoughtful on my end. And so I do remember too, though, that a second part of the definition that it was kind of like where there's, you know, multiple levels of a definition for an example. And one of them was scattering seeds. And at the time I had been reading Alison Gopnik's The Gardener and the Carpenter, which I'm sure you're both familiar with. And I just really resonated with the metaphor of being a gardener for your children and how they are like a perfect flower or plant, and they're growing into who they're going to be. And our role as the parent is to enrich that environment for them. And so I loved how the scattering of the seeds portion of the strewing kind of definition met with that gardener metaphor, because I was like, yes, like me intentionally thinking of all of these events, activities, toys, books, shows, whatever it may be, is like fertilizing this soil environment for them. And so it went from feeling like, I feel like a lot of times terms like this can feel like they come along with a set of rules that you have to follow, you know? And so I'm like, ooh, can I say it's strewing if I'm being super intentional? And I'm sometimes like, it wasn't just they would wake up and there would be something on the coffee table. It would be, okay, come on in, guys. And like a big reveal. So like, I'm like, ooh, am I following the rules? But for me, it just felt like, for me, it was like this enrichment of their environment. And it was this active role I could do. And I feel like as long as the expectations and the agenda and the schedule wasn't behind that, or like a set outcome for the strew item or activity or event, then it still was the heart of just bringing it into your lives for sparking curiosity, sparking learning, sparking connection. So anyway, I liked how it connected in with that early on thinking that I was coming around to in my unschooling, homeschooling journey.
I love that. And actually, it's funny that you say that, Kendall, because when I was looking up the definition to read today, that's exactly what I, very similar to what I thought. And it hadn't really occurred to me today that this untidily, I think it was the word untidily. Yeah. And it gives that sense of randomness, or just kind of without a lot of maybe carelessness, which is kind of like the opposite of what we're often talking about, I think, where, you know, I was thinking earlier about the idea that when we're really deeply listening to our kids, when we're observing our kids, when we're well connected with them, then we can be quite intentional, not even intentional, like tomorrow I'm going to strew something and, you know, let me get it right. Like not even that kind of intentional, as much as just even sometimes very spontaneous, we're in connection with them and something can be spontaneous, but it's still very, it can feel very thoughtful as far as us knowing who they are and what they might appreciate. And you're right, that dictionary version, it just kind of sounds like, oh, just, you know, tossing things down and see what takes. And then I wanted to say too, Ashley, about like just your point that, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing to be talking about and how much more we often are offering our kids than we might realize. And just that process of practice, really, sometimes it's helpful for people to write it out and really look at what they've kind of what's happening in their house, right? What they've offered. And as my kids have gotten older, I found it fun to look at, like you were talking about, the list in the community. And sometimes I would list like who strewed what to whom, right? Like, because I started to realize that there was a lot of back and forth. It wasn't just this idea of me feeling like, oh, I'm the mom, I need to think of some things. It just became like this genuine interest in one another. And it was either we were interested in something, so I might have an interest. And even though it's not specific to them, I know they'll be interested in it because it's related to something that I'm passionate about. And that usually is the case. You know, I can show them stuff and like whether it's a bird that I notice or whatever. And even if it's not somebody's particular interest, they're kind of excited because it's my interest or it's somebody else's. And then of course, you know, I do like to offer and invite to things that are really specifically their interest. But that idea of taking, kind of getting back to that idea of taking stock of things, I think if people are finding that, you know, maybe they're not interested in being really, really curriculum heavy, maybe they're moving toward unschooling, or maybe they're not specifically, but they're, I don't know, maybe they're a little bit more relaxed or they're wanting to be a little bit less specific with curriculum. I think the idea of strewing can offer maybe a little bit of comfort, because I think, you know, we can say to each other, oh, life is so full of things. There's all kinds of things to do and there's all kinds of things to learn. And like, that's true, but it doesn't sound very concrete. And particularly when people are starting out, I think that strewing can just bring some comfort to know that, yeah, there's some stuff, like I can write down some ideas ahead of time, or I can backtrack. Like Ashley, you talk about this a lot, just kind of like writing down what we've done, but it brings some sort of form to what we're doing. And I do think that over time, there's less of a need for that because it becomes more natural. But as a starting point, what a great thing. And I think too, if people live in like provinces or states where they need to be recording what they're doing for, you know, some sort of authorization or the school board, like what a handy thing to be in the habit of listing things and just kind of organizing what you're offering to your kids. I think the tricky piece is the difference between strewing and curriculum is that curriculum often has an outcome in mind. There's usually a goal at some point. I mean, even if you're really flexible with your kids, the plan is to do it, you know, in some form or another. And there's usually like a learning goal attached to the end of it, whereas strewing is much more open-ended. And so I think it's like so many things. It's like the simplest thing and the most complex thing, right? It is simple. It can be simple. We do it all the time. But the trick, I think, for us as parents is just really detaching from that outcome. And I don't know, like being self-reflective about why we're offering something in the first place. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think I'll speak from my experience, but I think where strewing got really interesting was when you realize, like what you said, you hear that, right? Learning happens everywhere. Learning happens, you know, every day. You can believe that, but it was when I started writing this stuff down and obviously like just doing it with the kids and observing the kids as well. But it got strewing got interesting and just fun and enjoyable when I was writing it down, and it was a practice that I would do quite a bit. And I don't know, for me, it just, I could see the learning so much more clearly. And like, I'm like, oh, we're covering so much stuff. And it was cool because it didn't feel hard. And I was at the point where I wasn't concerned about like gaps and stuff. I wasn't checking curriculum and things like that. But it was more so still just a comfort knowing that we are doing enough, we're doing lots, and it looks like all these different things. But when I could write it out, if I had to, like where we live, we don't have to report at all. But if I had to, I could go back and, you know, with different highlighters or something, and divide it into subjects, or, you know, go over everything we covered, or, you know, take it and write up a summary or whatever would have to be done pretty easily from all of that stuff, because the learning was happening in there. But it wasn't the reason I was strewing. Like, I was strewing for like what you guys are talking about, like one, so that we have stuff to do and interesting things to do. And when they're younger, there is a bit of like them relying, or maybe a lot relying on us to bring those things in. But it was just fun, and it was just allowed them to go further into the things they were already interested in, but be introduced to new things too. So I'm kind of getting off now, because I could keep going on about strewing, but I do really like, I think what's important is what you guys were saying too about the rules. And like when you're new at anything, the way I was strewing stuff at the beginning is not what it looks like now, because you're trying to figure it out. You're learning something new. You hadn't, you know, I mean, I guess when you have kids, everybody's strewing. That's the thing. I was thinking about, like, even if someone who is like, what are they talking about strewing? I was just thinking today about parents who are, you know, in connection with their kids, whether they homeschool or not. Like, we're all, you know, you're in connection with your kids. You know what they're interested in. Some people might know more so about their kids or less so, but when you're shopping them for them for their birthday or for Christmas, you're doing kind of a similar thing, right? And you're being thoughtful and intentional, because for that purpose, you want to get them a gift that they enjoy. And I kind of think about that with strewing is, you know, not worrying about, is this considered strewing or not? And again, the writing it down, because when I started recording for the community, or sharing what I recorded with the community, I started adding more and more, like my list grew and grew once I realized that it's not just about the materials I put out. There's a lot more there. And that was helpful to just kind of accept, kind of a, I don't know, a broader definition, I guess, of strewing. So, yeah.
Yeah. What's coming up as both of you guys are talking is it's almost like a mindset shift, because once you start looking for things, or you're doing that, you know, listing things after the fact, you realize like there's just so much more to find. And you kind of mentioned earlier on, strewing looked different than it does now. I remember early on, I would use the hashtag strewing for the win. And I think it's still going on Instagram, and people could share ideas. And I digitally document, like less list making and more photos, sharing ideas on Instagram. And then I get my photos sent to me in like a printed book. And so I feel like, because with strewing and with when the kids were young, I would set up like a pet adoption clinic. And so it was so multifaceted. And like you said, you could pick and pull out of that, oh, well, they were doing math here and writing here and interpersonal skills here. But it's just so all encompassing that I would just take photos of it. And that would make me feel like I had, you know, journaled, or what's the word I'm looking for?
Like recorded?
Recorded? Yeah. In a digital photo form. Yeah. And so it's changed from that over the years, because it definitely felt more like I can latch onto this framework of this active terminology And that made me feel more in control when my intentions were to like relinquish control so that my kids were self-directing themselves, because I really believed in the ideology of unschooling and self-directed learning. But that unschooling that I had to do, like you were saying, Erin, like it gives people, it's that gateway of feeling that small sense of like, and it's something that you can also then, it's small sense of control, and it's something you can also then share with others, extended family members, whoever, like that list that you're talking about, it makes it more concrete. And I love that you're saying that as you get thinking about it, more and more things you're reminded of, right, that do are important and are so enriching that you could just pass by them, and that you have to intentionally sit down and think about what you've been up to. And yeah, and so I think definitely I definitely, it was that gateway for me from seeing that self-directed was a much better fit, and I believed in that way of doing things, and yet still was like, and I'll screw, as part of my feeling like I'm actively doing something when people ask or wonder what's up with us.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me think about like, well, Ashley, you and I had talked briefly about whether, and I don't know, I'm just interested in this idea. So if we're observing our kids and we're listening and we're just really tuning into who they are, how strewing can be connected to the love languages, mm-hmm. which is kind of a cool way, in my mind, it's a cool way to think about it. And I hadn't really thought about that before, but I feel like it can be really connected, especially to some of the love languages. And I guess just and we can put a link to the love languages as well. But so I'm talking about sort of people's preferences in the way that they receive and give love, give love to people and receive from people. And the idea that I think there's typically five kind of main ways that are identified, which are gifts and words of affirmation and acts of service and physical touch and quality time, right? So I think when we keep those in mind and we keep a particular child in mind, although I would, it's interesting just to like expand it to other people in our life as well, because really when we think about it, we strew for all kinds of people. If we care about people, or we sort of notice they have an interest, I think when we think about it that way, there are so many examples of how we are actually just strewing all the time for various people. But I think with our kids, it feels more like a practice because it's this kind of term, you know, in homeschooling, but really we do it all the time. So if we think about it in terms of love languages, like the gift one is interesting. And you mentioned that, Ashley, that really maybe all parents are doing that when they're very intentionally choosing, whether it's a, you know, a birthday gift or whatever, they're very intentionally keeping that particular child in mind. And I love to do that if I'm out and it's just really spontaneous. So I know I've mentioned this before. I love to do it with food. So just being out and seeing like, I don't know, like somebody's favorite chocolate bar or somebody's favorite, you know, kind of berries or something like that. Or one of my kids used to have this interest for a little while in like exotic fruit, like just they'd hear about it and, you know, and so every now and again, I would be in a particular store and they'd be like, oh, that's, you know, we've never had that before. And I can't think of an example now, but just this fruit that we would not normally get. And I would spot it and just kind of fun to bring one home. But yeah, I mean, often if it's like a treat or something like that, like some kind of chocolate or whatever, it's just fun and it's connecting, right? It's just, and I think when we think about it that way, it's not necessarily for the purpose of learning. It's for the purpose of connecting. And it's also just for the purpose of, I don't know, serving our kids and building a richer life. Because I feel like it kind of takes us out of the realm of like, these are learning things and these aren't, you know, this is an educational thing. So I'm going to strew it. Because everything is educational, right? Like, think about a chocolate bar, for example. There's 1,000 things you could talk about with a chocolate bar. I mean, not, maybe not 1,000, but quite a few. You could, I mean, honestly, you really could when you start to look at where things come from, where they're manufactured, even the sensory things, like what do they like about the taste? There's ethics you can talk about. Not that you're going to strew something and turn it into a great big conversation, but just as much as you would anything else, you know? So I love to do that where I'm not even thinking like that there's a learning goal attached to something. I'm just enjoying gifting.
I have this thought. I've had a couple friends. I know I've had this conversation with a couple friends who do not homeschool their kids. And, you know, just we were having a conversation because they were curious. And we kind of got into probably me trying to explain how my kids learn and what our days look like. And they kind of, there were a couple different experiences or thoughts that were shared. I'll try to see if I can get it out. But like the one was this idea that, okay, so if you're, we'll use my youngest as an example, and he's still really into animals. And the friend was like, so is that what you do? Like, you mean like interest-led, child-led? So you know that they're into animals and you want them to learn or practice their, like say practice their reading. So you get, you know, and you set up a, I always think of it as more of like a play invitation, but like, and it's all animal themed and that draws them in because they're interested. And I could see where they were coming from. And I think you do. I mean, I know when I was teaching or even when, even when my kids, like I'm thinking about preschool too, that's not uncommon. Like that's not an uncommon practice to see. And I don't think that's wrong, but it's just not what I meant when I said I was strewing things based on the kids' interests and stuff. So it was a really interesting conversation. I can see why people, and why maybe a lot of people start there too. And that might be a totally fine place to start. It's just not what I mean when I say I strew and, you know, we really work around the children's and with the children's interests. And then the other one was just the other way where I think it was about time, although it might've been about money, like learning time, practicing how to tell time or using money, one of them. It was the calendar. It was the conversation about the calendar and how, so my youngest is 8 and this conversation could have been a couple of years ago now, probably around the time when they start talking about the calendar here, probably everywhere in kindergarten, like really young. Well, in my opinion, well before children have any use or interest in a calendar. I mean, they don't need it. And it doesn't take that long to learn and understand it. So we weren't explicitly teaching the calendar. And my friend was, I think doesn't homeschool and is a teacher. So I could relate to where her mind was at. And it was an interesting conversation. And she had some really thoughtful suggestions around like how I could interest my kiddo in learning about the calendar, and which was really kind of her. But I was also, I don't know if I was like trying to explain that I'm okay that he's not learning the calendar right now. And that's not, I think sometimes like what I'm getting at is that that's the idea with strewing, that we have like kind of what you were saying, Aaron, with the curriculum, you know, at this age, kids are typically taught the calendar and how to use the calendar. But they're not interested. Some might be, but most probably are not. So you bring in whatever they're interested in into the lesson or whatever about the calendar and, you know, try to spruce it up, I guess, and entice them to learn. Kendall, probably like what you were referring to earlier when you mentioned like the sneaky learning. So I just wanted to mention a couple of those things.
Yeah, because like I could totally, my daughter at a certain age loved scheduling things and wanted to bring her little calendar down and put what's going on. That was her wheelhouse, her interest. And therefore here's a really pretty calendar and we're going to set up and do it. And I'm going to have my phone and we're going to copy everything over because it was coming from her, as opposed to this reverse, like let's sneakily through a pretty calendar with the trains on it because my son likes trains to learn calendars. It's like you wait till there's an interest or a natural need so that there doesn't have to be that coercion or that sneakiness about it. And I agree with what you guys were saying where like all things can promote learning. I loved your example of the chocolate bar, and those conversations literally do come up. That might sound outlandish or strange to people, but like you could literally spark up a conversation, especially as your children get older, right? Like you just are chatting about it and it's natural and you're going with the flow of it. So it doesn't feel forced and you all learn things. And so I feel like anything and everything can be quote unquote educational. And I do see how some things can be seen as like objectively academic or not academic or for learning or for pure entertainment. But I don't really see it that way. I feel like everything has things learning, whether it's physical skills or social emotional skills, or learning about ourselves and the world, or interpersonal skills, being caring and working as a team with others. So while some things that I strew, I feel like would fall in that more objectively academic side of the spectrum, I think the difference lies in like your intention behind it. Like some people might say, oh, well, that's sneaky learning. And now you've tipped into traditional home educating, like you're doing too much with it. So now you're a traditional home educator. And I feel like the big difference, I think you mentioned it earlier, was like autonomy of choice. So you're not mandating any where, when, why, how they are using the STREW or the activity or the event or whatever it may be. And you're letting go of that outcome that you're desiring. And that's where it's, even if it's leaning on the more academic side of things, you've chosen it out of knowing it's something that's such a exciting, perfect fit for your kid. Then you're waiting to see what they do with it and how they want to work with it. And you're not forcing any specific one way that you had envisioned for it. And that takes a lot of work as you're heading in that direction. But as you see the spark of interest in the daughter who loves the calendar and wants to work with it, for an example, you're like, okay, that's what I want to keep having happen, not this other way around, kind of sneaky, coercive. I guess it would be manipulative to be like, well, you like this theme or topic, and we're going to learn about this really weird thing that you have no interest in, you can't fathom right now, but it's in the curriculum, so we're going to learn it via trains. But like, it's the opposite, because once you start seeing those natural things happen and then coming alongside and steering from within an interest you already know they have. Like one of the things you were thinking of talking about when we were talking about this conversation was, have you had any major strew fails? Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think about that, and I can't, because A, if the intention behind something is to bring something that makes them joyful, curious, learning, happy, connection, then if you suggest something and it's a no, well, you know, you don't go any further with it. And we know our kids so well, we've all been mentioning this throughout this conversation, that a lot of times what you are presenting is such a perfect fit. So it's kind of hard to fail when this is your framework of looking at your days together, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think, and just, there's so much there that you just said, Kendall, so that was good. So I'm going to try to remember back to a couple of things at the beginning, but remind me somebody to come back to the fail, because I do think I've had some fails. So I just want to I totally hear what you're saying, Kendall, right? It depends how you frame it. But mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll come back to the failing piece. But just to your point, I think when you were talking about how like there are so many things, even a chocolate bar, and as kids get older, those aren't forced conversations, or they're not artificial, they just come up. And so the reason that I actually mentioned that about the chocolate thing is I do remember it coming up really just naturally. I remember getting this thing that I thought my son would really like, and he was delighted, and we were talking about it, and just as a very natural point of conversation, it is a brand that ethically I don't tend to buy. So it was just that, it was literally me saying it that simply, you know. I didn't launch into a big, you know, thing about it. I just kind of said, yeah, I don't love to buy this particular brand of chocolate because, right? And I just kind of said a sentence or two. And I think that's where the distinction can sometimes be, where people especially in talking about self-directed learning or unschooling, there can be this idea that we shouldn't share too much. We should kind of, everything needs to come from the child. And yeah, I think there's room to just say what we think about things sometimes. Just say, it's really just almost narrating our own thought process in a way. And then there's that line, I think, where you don't turn it into an ethics lesson that the other person isn't asking for, right? So you kind of say enough that you're expressing your thought, and it's there if they want to take it further. And sometimes they do. But I think so much of kind of knowing where that line is between sort of sharing and offering versus manipulation and being stealthy about it. So much of that is in that relationship that, you know, I guess we just keep saying this, but it's so true. Over time, that connection, that relationship, that we start to kind of feel that. And when we move past that a little bit, because I definitely do move past that sometimes. And I think my kids feel respected enough that they can, and when I'm saying push back, I don't mean it's like any sort of a big argument, but I can just see they're like, you know, no thanks, I'm not interested in that. Or, you know, that's a little more information than I was looking for. And we're able to feel that. So it's not like a perfect dance, but there's definitely something there that the relationship's connected enough that you can kind of feel that line, and it might move a little bit on either side. Like there's a little bit of wiggle room there, but you can kind of feel like, is this worth opening up more information about and pursuing, maybe getting more materials related to it, giving more information? Or was this just enough? And I don't think there's any way to do that other than just to continue to be in practice with our kids, right? It's that time that we spend together and just really watching and listening. And I was going to talk about the family thing. So totally hear what you're saying, Kendall. I agree. I think that we know our kids when we're really coming from a place where we're not attaching an agenda to something, it's, things are going to go much more smoothly than it might sound that they could, just kind of listening to this from an outside perspective. But I do know for myself, for me, sometimes those, I do still attach things to a certain outcome that I want. And that's where I appreciate that my kids will sort of, I don't know, I picture it like a, you know, putting up their hand. They're not literally doing that, but that's kind of the sense that I get. But that's kind of interesting too, because kids are all different in the way that they'll do that. So I have one who is not as direct about saying, I don't really want to go here, or no thanks. And they will try to be super, super polite about it. And so for me, that's where I think I have to be careful not to take advantage, not to ask the kid that I know will have trouble saying no. You know, I mean, I know that sounds awful, but we're human and we're right. Like we're kind of working with different things and different dynamics in our own life. And so I think I'm really thankful that my kids are able to say no to me, but I am mindful that some find that a little bit easier than others. And, you know, people might find that they have a child who does like to please. And so it's a little bit more responsibility on us as a parent to check our motives, because the kid who always says no to something, that's, they know themselves. They're not worried about how we're going to respond. They're just going to let you know. But some kids, it's a little more, I don't know, you have to really dig a little bit deeper. At least for me, that's kind of what I've found, that I just have to kind of keep myself in check a little bit around that. And sometimes it's not like a learning goal. It's not like, oh, I introduced them because I want them to learn about this. For me, it's often like an experience. Like maybe there's live theater that's available, or a museum, or even a movie that I really think they'd enjoy. So it's often for me like, oh, this would be such a rich experience and I don't want them to miss out on it. But I don't know. That's kind of a scarcity mindset as well. There will always be another opportunity. And just because I'm pumped about something does not mean that it's going to be as meaningful to them. So,
It's making one thing that's, I have a kid that's, and it's my younger one, who's a little bit more like that. I have to be a little bit more careful. I don't have to be careful with the other one. I get the no and I keep thinking of the word rejection. They reject my ideas or, you know, what I leave out. But with the other one, I'm mindful of that. One thing that's helpful is, I guess, just even like remembering that when they say no to something that we're offering, it leaves space for the thing, like something else that they can say yes to that makes so much more sense for them. Because, yeah, like you said, Erin, we can be so excited about something. And I mean, and it might be something that they could enjoy, but it still takes up time and space away from something that they might be needing more or interested in more at that time. And when I think, so I think it makes a lot of sense. We're talking about like the intention and reason behind strewing, and how it is so connected to our relationship with them. Because actually it was, I do want to mention my, what I wrote down for strewing fails. But first I was looking at, it was Sue Elvis, and I think I wrote it down from one of her it would have been a podcast I was listening to, and she talked about this strewing rejection. Maybe that's probably why the word's in my mind. And she kind of said, you know, if your children reject something that you strew, that she views it as like not a problem because the world is filled with opportunities. Which I thought, like, that's just a helpful, like, that I find that helpful to keep in mind, because it can be a little bit hard, especially if we are excited about it. Or I know there's some things where I'm like, oh, I know that they would love this, but for some reason, whatever that reason is, they're saying no, or they're rejecting it at this time. And that can be hard. But just knowing that, like, well, there's so many other things, and they're not going to experience everything. And that's totally okay too. But then she did also go on to say that, and this ties into what you guys were sharing, that like trust has a lot to do with how our kids feel about what and why we strew. I don't know if I wrote that down wrong. I hope that made sense. But basically what she was getting at is like, do the kids feel that they can look at what we strew or listen to what we strew and easily walk away from it? And like you said, Erin, that depends on their personalities. And then, of course, obviously, that depends on how we've been, how we've responded or reacted to their rejections in the past. And I know, like with my youngest, with both of them, but with my youngest especially, I try to, it can be really hard when they're saying no to something, depending on how that no is coming out. And I try to make a point of sometimes saying, I'm glad you know that that's not something that you want to do right now. Even though, like, in my mind, I'm thinking like, oh, I really wish I wasn't hearing a no right now. Like what you said, Erin, they know themselves to be able to say no right now. And then with the strewing fails, I'll just quickly say, like one thing I do find myself mentioning quite a bit, probably for myself to hear, is when I offer something, like an experience, or, you know, like, I think I've talked about this before, like, do you want to sign up for soccer? No. Do you want to sign up for this? No. I don't never offer it again. Or, I mean, so I've learned through strewing fails that my kids are not super into, and I mean, just through observation, they're not super into crafts and arts. Both of them are not really into that too much. So lots of times if I put stuff out, and I just do it a lot less now, I just know that they're the odd time they do get into it. And I think that's why I continue to pull it out. And I will mention to people that if you strew something and it is rejected, or it is just like ignored and not picked up, you know, that's important information, because, you know, okay, they're not into that right now. However, I think we can be quick, because I'm trying to figure out my kids all the time, right? What are they into? What do they want to do? What kind of people are they? But people change, and people are just into different things at different times. So I always think, don't be quick to, you know, toss something or never pull something out again. And I'm always amazed by how my kids grow and change in such a short time, where, I mean, one day I might say, do you want to sign up for soccer? And they might say yes. So it's not, and maybe that's what you're saying too, Kendall, like, I don't actually consider it a fail. It can feel like it in the moment, or maybe it is a fail in the moment, but maybe it'll be successful or picked up next time. I'm just taking a quick look. Okay, no, I think that's all I wanted to mention. I just think it, I was thinking if there's anything else, like any other fails, because it's probably helpful for people to hear, but
yeah,
it can definitely feel that way.
I should clarify because I definitely have got a lot of rejections. I guess I was considering the fail would be we're actively doing it or participating in something and we realize it's not a good fit. Or when I think when I'm bringing something into the home, it's always something that I'm, oh, they're going to love this. And so I can't remember any major rejections to an item or a toy or an activity. But yeah, I think it's those, the clarification is, I love that, thing you read from Sue, the rejection of a suggestion. Many, I've had many of those. And I agree with both of you where I have the one child who 100% knows himself, yes or no. And then I've learned that a maybe from my daughter is a, pretty much a no. And so it took me a few years to not, like you're saying, Erin, capitalize on that maybe. Yeah. And so I definitely have had the rejections or just things I could be excited about. And often it's a fit for one child and not the other. And so I've gotten better at, okay, how can we make that work then? So for example, we do art journaling and my son multiple times. So the first time is, oh, do you want to do this? My daughter was on board right away. I get a no, but then maybe some more information I'll provide for my son who had said no. So there's that second phase of, well, here's what it would look like and here's what it would be about. Still a no. Okay. We finally get to the, okay, it's an obvious no. So what I did for him was I created this kit that we bring along with us that each time he opens it, there's a few extra things in it, fresh stickers or different coloring sheets of something he's really into or whatever it may be, some little items and objects in the bag that he can use while we're waiting there for his sister. And he's 100% more happy with that than having to participate in the thing. And so I think that's where it's, there's a lot of how can we make this work for one child and not the other, when we do have the different personalities and the different interests. But yeah, definitely have had a lot of rejection of suggestion for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder too, like just so much of it is the language we use, right? So I think fail is probably, and actually even rejection, it makes it seem like it's very black and white. Like we have this idea and they're either accepting it or they're not, or they're saying yes or no. And really, I think it's more natural and fluid than that, you know, which is probably what you were getting at, Kendall, is we're just always kind of, you know, thinking and observing and offering. And to your point, Ashley, like kids will sometimes not be interested in something in the moment and then they might be later. So yeah, I think we can think about it in ways that aren't quite so stark. Like they totally said yes, or they totally said no.
I have a great example of that. It's like a 1,000 piece puzzle. For my son, that was automatically a no. But then it's like the nice thing about strewing physical items is that when they're in your home and integrated, they can kind of be circled back around to. And like, I love your point, Ashley, reintroducing an idea or a suggestion, but literally that could be several hours later. Like if we think of ourselves as an adult, that totally makes sense how we're feeling in the moment or from day to day or month to month or year to year. So everybody's always changing, but so the example to what you're saying, Erin, the puzzle, at first it seems overwhelming, boring, not what I'm interested in from my son's point of view. But then over the day, he's sneaking in and, oh, one of the, you know, I'm interested in this little corner of the puzzle and starts to get into it. And then I feel like there is where you don't make the big fuss, right? We talk about this all the time in the unschooling world of the, I told you you would like this. Kind of just that is a bit of the sneaky element of strewing in that it's kind of lying around for a while. If it's more of a tangible thing that we can dabble in and out of. And when they feel the pressure's off, maybe the initial suggestion or like, here's the new thing can feel a little overwhelming because they do have to gain that trust in that you don't have an outcome in mind. You don't need to sit and do this puzzle. Like, you never know what they're thinking. You don't need to sit there and do it from start to finish. So when they see a little bit more of the information around, oh, I can come in and out, I can pitch in, people can give me colors that I'm looking for in the box, different roles. Anyway, so it's like a little metaphor of the jigsaw puzzle as strewing. It's a pretty good metaphor of being able to come in and out and do it at your own pace and schedule, work together at it, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and you're right, Kendall, if I'm understanding what you said the right way, that there is, you know, kind of that, you know, putting it out and waiting and understanding that the timing might be a little bit different. And then if they express interest, you're not, you know, you don't want to turn them off either by jumping at it, you know. So there is maybe on some level, I don't know if sneaky is the right word, but there's some thoughtfulness in the way you're responding, in the way that you're sort of presenting it. But you know what, I feel like it's the way you're describing it, it's, yeah, there's maybe a tiny bit of sneakiness to it, but the difference is you are trying to create and help support them in a situation that they're starting to enjoy, right? Maybe kind of helping take some barriers away, where they might feel self-conscious if they're being watched. You're really trying to create an environment that if they choose to enjoy this, there's lots of space to do that versus pretending maybe that you really want to play a board game because it has multiplication facts in it, you know, where you're trying to push a learning goal. So that's just kind of an interesting nuance that I hadn't thought about, but I know that feeling where you see, you know, you see a child kind of warming up to something and you are being strategic about the way you react because, not because you're attached to the idea that they do the puzzle or join soccer or, you know, actually yeah. whatever it is, but just that you're not wanting to insert your too much, I don't know what the word is, but like too much enthusiasm that might actually kind of make them, I don't know, kind of back them up a little bit with it. But the purpose feels different to me. It feels like removing barriers to leave space for them to enjoy something versus I'm going to introduce this as fun, but really there's a concept that I need you to learn here. I'm kind of all over the place, but
I totally get that. Like it goes yeah. back to the intention of connection, joy, you know, sparking an interest. That's at the heart of it. So yeah, it wasn't so that you get better at jigsaw puzzles and I can brag to all my friends that you did a big jigsaw puzzle. You know, it's, we're enjoying this as a family, want to join in. It's okay if you don't. And then the slow process of checking it out, dabbling in and out and realizing that it's what they wanted to make of it, perhaps. Like, I think that's a big part of it too, is like whatever they want to make of the thing is the best thing, the best possible outcome. Because we can be following, I see some of your lovely watercolor paintings, Ashley. We could be following a tutorial and it can start, if it starts to feel cumbersome or, okay, this is now stressing me out and I was taking a moment to paint to have a nice calm de-stress moment, we might turn off the tutorial and do it our own way. And then the result, your goal was to relax and have some quiet time to yourself. So you've met that and your art probably reflects better than trying to keep pushing through someone else's agenda. That's just an example of, yeah, whatever. So yeah, sometimes like we've literally bought a board game and the kids start using it in a different way. Like we do a lot of like the physical building style board games and okay, they don't want to follow the rules, but they're giggling, they're laughing, we're all having fun together. That's what's important, not that we follow the rules and see who the winner is. So it's those types of things. The outcome is enjoyment and them making it their own, kind of.
Yeah, I think all of that is actually really, really helpful in thinking about like, what does this actually look like? It kind of made me think about maybe how I used to strew as I thought like the kids were getting older. Like obviously when they were really, really little, if I pulled out a puzzle, I would probably be down on the floor with them, kind of getting them started, almost like teaching them like how a puzzle works, like when they're 1 or 2 years old, like those little wooden ones and stuff. But then as they get older, you think like, oh, they can do a 100 piece puzzle or whatever on their own. And maybe they could, but for my guys, I often realize that like How I present what I'm strewing can make a big difference. On, I always think about like, am I making this stuff actually accessible for them? So I liked how you were using the word like removing barriers, Erin. So like, if I had like, for like now, when I pull out a puzzle, the odd time I might pull out one that I think like if it's new and it's got like characters on it or something that they like, I might just leave it out. But usually, if I'm intentionally strewing a new puzzle or surprising them with one that like I brought home or something, I will pull it out of the box and I will maybe even get it started. And it just seems to me, because I'm even thinking about like for some kids, like the transition to a new activity. And like I really liked what you were saying, Kendall, about we don't know what they're thinking. So yeah, you leave a puzzle out, oh, look what I got you, and you're just coming with all your excitement. And you think like the kids can be like, oh, great, like, oh, I love this, and just get started. And some kids, I'm sure, do. But for some kids, yeah, they might be thinking, like, do I have to sit down and do I have to do this right now? Do I have to finish the whole thing? Like, who knows? But I think there is, it took me a while anyway to realize that I didn't think I was putting any pressure on anyone. And my one kid in particular was feeling a whole bunch of pressure. Yeah, just from maybe even me being excited. But I think like, because sometimes I'll just quickly say to people, oh, I'll just like what I was saying earlier in the conversation, pull out new toys or toys that they haven't played with in a long time. Lots of times when I'm talking about like physical, I think more so like the physical items, I will, like if it's a puzzle, I'll get it started. Or if it's, I don't know, when they were younger, like if it was a marble run, I wouldn't just have the bin always sitting down, or like train tracks, like I would partially set it up at least. And I think Sue even talked about that too. But when you guys were talking, it was kind of making me think more about how we present the stew, I guess. So, kind of thinking about like our involvement. Sometimes it might be just laying something out, or sometimes I think Sue Elvis was sharing how. You know, in front of her girls, she'd be like pulling out a board game and waiting to see if they would notice. And she said, maybe they wouldn't, but maybe they'd be like, oh, mom, like, what's that? And oh, it's a board game we haven't had out for a while. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think of that as like being sneaky, because of what you were saying, Erin, but it is being intentional. And I think that that just makes. And again, if they say nothing, don't notice, or there's no interest, then we really are like, oh, okay, and we move on to something else. So I don't think of it as sneaky, but it is, there's some thought into how we offer things, because like I said, I thought I was not pressuring anyone, and just by leaving out, like I used to do these themed sensory activities because I really enjoyed the creative aspect of it, but I was disappointed when my eldest just showed no interest in it. And that was just pressure, just the fact that, I mean, I wouldn't have been hard on him or anything like that, but some kids just really pick up on our feelings. Or maybe you think you're hiding your disappointment better than you are. But yeah, I think kind of playing around with our role in how we strew, and lots of times I'll do it with them for the beginning, or sometimes the whole time, and it just ends up being something we do together. And I'm, you know, they still get that experience. So that's what we do with the watercolor paints, which my one kid will get into. That's like the one art, I guess, that but not all the time. Absolutely not all the time. Just when they're interested.
I love finding like whole family strews. One area that we all come together on is podcasts. So if I hear of a new podcast I think we might like as a family, I'm all excited to present it. Maybe we go up to see my parents. It's further away. So some of our favorite ones recently are the ones called The Big Fib, and it's basically two truths and a lie, or and then it goes into you have to figure out which one of the professionals is lying the whole time. And so we'll pause it and weigh in and then unpause it and see if we were right. Anyway, so I love stuff like that. Recently this summer, a big strew for us was that we went to a store and nobody knew why we were there, not even my partner. And we get down the aisle and it's all water gun. And we had not previously had water guns. And so even my husband was like, yeah, so excited about it. So then as a family all summer, we've had water guns. And then my daughter had picked this more sword that sucks up water. And so like letting them pick their own, and then it's an activity for the whole family. And then of course, every time we do water guns, we all have to, who's up for it. You know, and that's not everybody every time, but these whole family, like, because there's so, I think there's so much more excited about getting involved when, like you were saying, Ashley, sometimes you do the whole thing with them when we're part of it with them, because it is really about bonding and connecting as well. So.
And I think about that, like sometimes there's those whole family strews, I think you called it. And then maybe there's one who isn't too sure, and just maybe not getting to, I mean, we like to come to consent as a family, don't get me wrong, but I'm thinking of like, let's say a movie or a read aloud or something like that. And you don't necessarily have to have, because I think there was a period of time where I felt like I had to have everybody on board to really enjoy a book or a movie. And it's really okay if one person doesn't want to watch, or if one person doesn't listen. And often, like kind of like your example about the jigsaw puzzle, often they will wander in and end up being part of it. But it kind of reminds me, I think in that same post you're referring to, Ashley, where Sue, I think she's basically saying like, if I'm interested enough to introduce it, like maybe I'm interested enough to try it myself. So if my child doesn't want to watch the documentary, maybe I do. And again, not for the purpose of like putting it on and sort of seeing, you know, okay, well, they wander in, but just genuinely, you know, maybe it's of interest. And I think of that even with your watercolor, even if our kids aren't directly interested or directly interested all the time, you're still introducing richness into the environment by showing that you're a person who's following their interests, who's curious about things. That's one of the things that I have been really interested to hear some of the things that Sue's talked about. And it's, I don't think these are her words, but I kind of think of it as like creating an atmosphere. I think that's just a really fun way to think about it. And it kind of lets us, because I think one of the things that people, that's hard for people about thinking about like self-directed learning, is they feel like, well, I have so many things that I want to introduce to my kids though. I have ideas and I have things that I want to share with them. And how am I going to do that if they're just directing their own education? And I think what strewing does is it offers that opportunity to bring things in. Like we certainly can bring in our own ideas. It doesn't always have to be, is my kid passionate about this? We can introduce new things. Again, as long as we're sort of detached from the end goal or the outcome. But Sue talks about, I think it was about, she has a post about unschooling when you also have a heart for Charlotte Mason. I think that's what it was. And the idea that, you know, if you kind of like the idea of picture study, for example, in art, there's nothing to stop you from putting up some different, you know, I think she would print off different prints and she would rotate them. Your kids are still seeing them. They're still part of the environment, but they're not being asked to do something that has a specific outcome to them. Mm-hmm. But chances are it's going to spark conversation. And if it doesn't, you know, then it doesn't. But I love just really expanding that idea of strewing and how we kind of bring in richness. And like, I often think about that in the holiday season, like for us around Christmas, where we have pretty often have Christmas music just kind of going, and, you know, candles and decorations, and maybe each day we bring out different decorations. It's really just part of tradition, but to some degree, we're sort of introducing our kids to interesting things and some of the traditions that, you know, we might have had, or like my husband and I both have some decorations that we had as kids, and all of those things, it's not like a, like that's a situation where there's not like a fail, like it's not like they're accepting it or they're not, we're just including these in our environment, and they can kind of ask as much or as little as they want. My husband, I realized this, and he wouldn't even know the word, he is such a natural strewer. And I think it's because he has so many deep interests himself. So he has all these retro things that he's kept, these little gadgets and all these sort of like things from the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And, you know, he'll bring them out of the basement and just, I remember when the kids were younger, they would be maybe taking old watches apart or looking at like a cell phone from like 1995 or something like that. And we think of these things, they're kind of not a big deal, but they're actually super interesting to kids often to kind of bring up some of those traditional things from family. So I don't know. There's so many different fun things that we can do that are beyond like an educational game. Or
you mentioned Christmas seasonal decorating, and I'm a four seasons of the year and in between seasons decorator, and my son really enjoys it with me. We call it doing setups. We'll just take a surface somewhere and set up, and it's often bringing in natural elements from outside and changing it up as the seasons turn, and he gets really into that with me. And then we have like a double door where all our crafts and supplies and paper and doodads are, and so I'll use that to display their artwork and projects and things that they've created or found, and then I'll change it up seasonally. It's the little old the teacher heart in me. So this right now it's got like apple chains that I cut out of paper, and I actually have a picture of my great grandmother in her schoolroom in the 40s, maybe getting on to the 50s above it. So it's quite schoolish looking. And yet right now, like I had recently, I would consider it a strew. I introduced them to the show Wishbone. I found Wishbone. Do you guys remember that show? I love it. On YouTube, I found it and they are just loving it. So they watch episodes here and there. So for our refresh of enriching, like you're saying, enriching the environment and just making it homey and inviting, I have little cute photos of Wishbone and all his costumes as part of our, on our double door stuff where everything's all taped up. And we just love like putting on, I have a favorite essential oil. It's called Cheer Up Buttercup. And in the deep, dark winter months, sometimes we'll turn on like bird singing noises and stuff just to like cheer us all up. So like anything you can do in their environment too, that's not a direct learning opportunity or anything like that, but just creating the whole space. I love that idea.
Yeah, I often, I really love thinking about like the environment that they're in, but also I think a lot now when I think about strewing, I'll think about like our sensory experiences. So like what you're talking about, like with the different scents, in when it's like colder and darker, and just putting thought around that stuff. And actually one time, my eldest has a very strong sense of smell. So once I realized that, I was like, okay, I probably shouldn't just go pick out a candle by myself because I'll probably pick one that he can't stand. So we actually, the one time ended up going, we've only done this one time, I think, but you could do it with like soap and different things as well. But we went out candle shopping, me and the kids, and we went out and it was like a whole experience. We found like a local shop and they were talking to the shopkeeper and they were talking about all the different scents. And I remember being in there thinking, if I hadn't like dragged them in there, being like, we're going to go, my mom needs a candle. They'd be like, oh, this is so boring. But because I had the conversation like, oh, I really like to have a candle. But will you guys like help me pick out the one that you think you would like to smell? And it became like this whole experience that we had together. But just to like take into consideration, like collaborate, I guess, around like our sensory experience in the home. And they really enjoyed that. But I was even thinking about like the different, like you mentioned music and decorations. But I was thinking about, like we've done, like the lighting. So they even have like these neat, I don't know what you call them, but like projector lights with like different colors and stuff for their rooms, that they can kind of like change their environment in and like control their environment whenever they feel like it. Or like I'll find like a really soft pillow that I know somebody would enjoy, or even like things like strewing like fidget toys. I definitely do that quite a bit. But just to like, yeah, to add to their day. The one thing I strewed recently around sensory stuff too, we got these, like, I don't know if you guys have heard of, like, the body socks, where it's like this really stretchy material, right? And they can put their whole body in. And it looks funny because, like, when they stretch out with their arms and their legs, I always think they look like a flying squirrel. Yeah, like, I noticed my one kiddo who has lots of sensory stuff going on would use their clothes and stretch out their clothes a lot. So again, going back to that observation, and I finally was like, oh my gosh, why have I never got you one of those body socks? So I just got one for each of them. And I just, it wasn't for the birth or anything. It was just kind of something that I strewed for them. And I was very careful to not be too excited about them. When I just kind of left them. I'm like, oh yeah, just, if you like it, great. Played it down a bit so there wasn't, pressure, like mom's expecting us to use these or whatever. But and then another thing we strewed, kind of sensory related in the house, was at one of those sensory swings. And that gets used all the time too throughout the day. So I don't really like think of those things as like learning, but it is kind of still learning because they're learning about their needs, they're learning about their sensory differences, they're learning about like how these different things will regulate them stuff. So maybe it's a little less like academic learning, but I mean it definitely is still stuff we can strew throughout their day that has quite the impact on them. And when you think about like the sounds, the lighting, the different smells, and all the sensory stuff. So that's something how I've kind of evolved in my strewing, because I don't think I was probably doing some of that all along, but I wouldn't have really considered it as like I wouldn't have listed it as something I strewed in the past, but it definitely would be something that I'd consider that now. And same with what you were saying, Kendall, like with the like decorating and stuff and being intentional with that, like it really is strewing like for their environment.
Yeah, and expanding your own definition of what's important, like shifting away from academic, does this tick, reading, writing, history, science? Like over time, we're like, that's not even what's the most important. So giving value and validating your choice to bring these things into your home as being like top priority, like more important, is also a shift that over time, when we gain more confidence in seeing them grow and learn from just having a rich environment, you get more confidence in being like, you know what, this is a more important thing that I'm doing right now than what I would have thought 5 years ago, getting that math book that was dinosaur themed because I thought they'd love it. So, just placing value in all of the facets of their life. I love that.
Yeah. It's you were talking about this, the dinosaur theme, the math book or whatever, Kendall, and I was reading something online the other day, and somebody was trying to explain unschooling to somebody else, but they weren't an unschooler. They were just explaining kind of their idea of it. And it was very much that idea. Like you look, you figure out what your kid's interest is, and then you get all the stuff around that. And I just wanted to say that I find that sometimes that's like the worst. That can just kill the interest right there, right? Like even if you're not surrounding it with like math and reading, like even if it's just for the purpose of getting more stuff, I think you can do that, but I would do that in partnership or in conversation or kind of as a gift you've thought about, rather than, oh, you're interested in dinosaurs, so I've bought you seven things that have to do with dinosaurs. Because I can't remember which one of you said it, but often our kids are deeper into their interest than we can imagine. It's usually something much deeper than, oh, they like dinosaurs or they like race cars or something
Yeah,
like that.
I have an example that kind of fits with that. My son loves Google Maps and he's really good at it. And so instead of just jumping to being like, okay, maps, we're going to do a ton of learning, sit down pencil learning with math. I like instead like showed interest in his interest and like, wow, this is amazing. Like you're so much quicker than me on here. And can you show me this? We kind of turned it into a bit of a game where I'm like, how fast could you find a ship? How fast could you find a mesa or whatever? And just, then testing and seeing, is he lighting up or is that ruining it for him? And of course he was loving that. So then you had mentioned just a few minutes ago, having it a partnership. And so I did find an Usborne maps book. and showed it to him first. Is this something like a flip through on YouTube that you would be interested in, so that you don't have that, well, I bought it, so we're going to do it because you love maps. So he was like, oh yeah, I really like it. And then we have been super flexible with it, dabbling in and out of it, casual. Do you want to do a page in that with me today? And then, oh, this one's not really, I'm not interested in this one. Can we skip it? Yep. Like just making it what it is and having them, I like that word partnership, of so that you're not ruining an interest by making it what you think it should be. And then just meeting them where they're at and like really seeing them for something they are into. And then I love that, that thought, like, cause that just came to mind as, oh, that's an example of kind of a partnership of getting them on board with the Strew before the Strew even comes into the home. And then not being like every morning at 9 a.m. we're sitting down and doing a page of this, right? Like making it more of, oh, do we want to do that again? As if it's a fun activity, it's an offering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too, when we're, you know, when you are giving, when you've both been giving examples of different things that your kids enjoy or that you offer to your kids. And I think also if we can detach ourselves from the idea of particular ages or developmental stages, because like one of my kids in particular, but honestly, I think most kids that I know, it's kind of that joke where you go to declutter. So you might open up an old chest and put things in bags to donate. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, that game. I forgot we had that game. And, you know, you've maybe put it away because 4 years ago, they weren't that interested in it, but there's some maybe nostalgia in it for them, or maybe they're interested in it at a different level. But we used to have that happen quite a lot where I would be, so I guess that's not even strewing. It's just kind of happenstance where I would be moving something and they would suddenly be interested in something that we had put away like sometime before. But just interested in it in a new way, where in my mind, I'm like, well, that's a younger kid's game. We're not using it anymore. So we might as well, you know, recycle it to somebody else. And all of a sudden it's super interesting when it's on its way out the door.
Maybe that's more at the pure heart, like the original definition. That's getting at that random element of just happening upon something. So yeah. Both are valid, I think, for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm aware of our time. I just wanted to touch on something, and I'm not sure how to articulate it exactly, but I'm thinking about like, cause we've been talking a lot about strewing sort of items or atmosphere. Actually, you touched on digital strewing, which I think is such a great thing now. But there's something for me too about strewing opportunities that are not just one-offs, like, would you like to go, you know, to see a live show? But maybe like, so for example, as my daughter got older, like she's had a couple of volunteer opportunities that she's taken advantage of, but they have been pretty extensive commitments. So you kind of, you know, you read them the information about the opportunity and everything sounds fun at the beginning. Well, not everything, but often it's like an enticing thing at the beginning. And so for me too, it's just been like, if I'm inviting my child to do something that's going to be a fairly big time commitment, just really being upfront about that and not, you know, so I'm specifically thinking about a couple of like wildlife things she's been involved in. So I've done some stuff on Instagram about the endangered bird stuff that she's done with the piping plovers. And at first glance, it looks, I mean, you're working on a beach, you're working with a biologist, you're helping birds. They're extremely cute little species. So it's very enticing. And just making sure that if I'm offering that invitation, that I'm also being forthright with, like what's the big picture of this? How long is the day? It could be really hot. What is the commitment that the organization is expecting? Trying to think what else, but yeah, just really being upfront about, yeah, this is a really great opportunity. And also this is the fullness of it. And these might be the pieces that we don't have time to do this summer if you're committed to this. So there's something there for me too, that I think homeschool parents can get, and probably parents in general, can get excited about their kids being like part of something, joining something. But I think we have to be really upfront and maybe even realistic with ourselves about like, what's the commitment? So that's something that comes to mind.
Natural learning areas about life learning. If it got to a point where they wanted the volunteer position to end, here's what that looks like that, you know, that can happen to any and all of us. So I think that often unschoolers or life schoolers or natural learners can get criticized for, if they're not in an everyday all day system with structure, how are they learning responsibly? It's these things that you're talking about. It's that we're there to help lay out, this is what it would likely look like. And then when you're actually in it, a lot of stuff comes up as well. And if we need to end it, I can help support you to do that. Or there's only X amount of time left and we've made a commitment. So the life learning we're doing here is that we're being responsible to finish what we start. All these elements of it are these rich areas where those things come up naturally so often. They don't need to have this artificial public school system to create them. They're coming up in everyday life all the time. But that's definitely interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think I've gotten there yet because I don't have older ones. I think I'll relate more to what you're saying as mine get older, because that is a big commitment. And it's that bridging the gap into young adulthood, right? Of, ooh, this is like, I'm still within things that are set up for children, for under 13, under 15. And you've tipped into, okay, this is more of like an adult responsibility and it's going to be different. So that's awesome to hear that you did provide all that information, because it is shifting from expectations on a minor or a child into expectations on an adult. That might be a big portion, like a big component of the feeling, the need to, because it could have felt like naysaying, like warning, like maybe not, like let me, like it can, you know, you don't want to kill the excitement, but maybe that's why. Maybe it was shifting into this new territory of, this is the real stuff now, and we want to fulfill the commitment if we're going to make the commitment type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's helpful too, to realize that, like, I don't know if I can explain my thought around this, but I was just, as you were saying that, Erin, I was kind of making a connection as to like why it should be that much easier, I think, for me when, again, I'm going back to my youngest, saying no to when I offer to like sign up for a new experience. And it's just making me think like, what you were saying you were doing for your daughter, like maybe that's what he's doing in his mind, is being cautious and careful before he commits. Like maybe some people just personality wise. And I think I was like that when I was growing up, because when you're getting involved in something new, it can, you have to really think about what am I actually signing up for? What am I actually saying yes to? Like, it's easy for me to say, well, it's soccer. And he has actually come back through conversations and asked some questions where I was like, oh, right. Like it makes, like, I know what it will look like for him because I've kind of done that before. And I've done lots of experiences like that before, but I don't know what's in his mind when I say, do you want to sign up for soccer? And there's a lot of little things. And he's asked certain questions where I'm like, oh, I didn't know that you wouldn't know the answer to that. Or I didn't know that that would even be something that you'd be thinking about / worried about. So I wonder if, like what we want our kids to do as they get older is before they, you know, jump on a new exciting idea, we want them to take some time to think about what they're actually saying yes to or signing up for. I wonder if it's just going to be helpful, I think, for when, because I've been trying to remind myself specifically with him not wanting to sign up for certain things, not stop offering things completely, but being careful to not offer it too much to the point where I'm not respecting that he has made the choice. That's not something he wants to do right now. Because as he gets older, I want him to be thoughtful and critical about this stuff. And if something for whatever reason doesn't feel right, that he is confident and, you know, doesn't feel like he can't say no. So I don't know if that made sense, but just as you were saying that, I was like making that connection somehow.
Yeah, no, I hadn't been thinking about that, but I love that because we don't know what the whole process is in somebody's mind when we ask them to do, not ask them to do something, but ask if they're interested in something. For some people, they're thinking sensory. For some people, they're thinking, how much socializing am I going to do? For other kids, they're thinking, how much socializing am I going to get to do? Like, there's so many different ways that kids' brains are processing that. And we're offering it with the information that we already have and what our experience is with an activity. So it just shows you how much there is to it, to really being respectful and consent-based with it. And there's a lot to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like I should just quickly add, since I mentioned that I've always said to them, you can go try it. If you don't like it, I'm okay if you don't want to continue doing it. I've tried to be very clear with that because I totally understand. Yeah, you're saying yes to something at whatever age it is. And sometimes when you're older, you do commit and you can't as easily quit or walk away or whatever, or stop going. And I've tried to be very clear that if you try this and it's not for you, you know, we don't need to keep going. So I just wanted to quickly mention that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't know how much time either, if you both have a little bit more time or not, but I wanted to touch on one more thing. And then if either of you have anything, that's fine too. Mine was just around, I'm wondering if we could toss around some like low cost ideas around strewing, because I think that, I don't know, I just feel like that can be a barrier for people, as far as even some of the things we've been talking about, like, you know, buying certain things for the kids or going to a show or, you know, offering maybe different experiences. And I'd just be interested to hear if either of you can think of things or have ideas that they were low cost, maybe no cost. I know for me, one thing that I like to do is if we're already doing something, strewing an idea with in that. So for example, something I often think about, like if we're going down to the Santa Claus parade, we have like a parade of lights here where it's at nighttime, and kind of making that into an event, right? So, you know, do we want to do the outdoor, like, do we want to put our outdoor lights up the same night as the parade? So it's all kind of festive at the same time. Do we want to have like a popcorn and hot chocolate party when we get home? Do we want to put a movie in when we get home? Just sort of like expanding an experience that we're already doing. I mean, that one happens to be free. The parade is already free, which is great. But even if you were paying money for something, maybe you could expand, kind of put a little extension on or offer that extension. So that's something that I have always found seems to be something people enjoy. Other ideas for me would be like introducing different types of music simply through a radio station or a playlist. So one of my guys loves different, has come to really like different eras of music. So he'll immerse himself in different eras of music and just finding different ways to, yeah, just put a playlist together, find a radio station. Again, like nature, right? If we're already out, just, you know, are we going to collect rocks? Are we going to, so things that are kind of already pretty handy around us. And what I like about that is it kind of slows me down too, because it kind of goes along with that slow living, kind of simple living, and gratitude. Like, let's look at what we already have rather than feeling like we all always have to obtain something else and bring it in. So anyway, those are some for me, but I wondered if either of you had thoughts that work.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it really does go along with the whole slow living. And even I know I see different things pop up, like strewing schedules, which can be helpful. And I've been asked many times these types of questions, like, how do you plan your strewing? Do you strew something new every day? And I think some people can get excited too at all the different materials they can bring in. And that I'm just like, no, 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 no. I mean, if that's what someone wants to do, go right ahead, but it's definitely not necessary and it's not what I do. So, I mean, I'd mentioned the idea of pulling out things That worked a lot. It worked a lot more to pull out things when the kids were younger and they wouldn't necessarily know where to look to go pull out things. Now they kind of know where everything is. So I actually find I'm doing that a little bit less, but can definitely still do that. The other thing I will do is I'll check the thrift stores, especially for like old games or puzzle. I mean, you can find so many things at the thrift store, even like old appliances or different things that to take apart if you've got a kid who wants to take things apart. Or the I know Facebook, like we have a buy nothing group in our area, so going to places like that. Not that everybody has access to a library, but having access to a library for books. I'm a huge fan of kids' books, but I don't spend a lot of money on new books, and we use the library a lot. And actually, our library, and I know other libraries do similar things. Ours just started, like they've got puzzles now. I think a family donated puzzles to get it started, so you can start. I'm super excited about that, because how many puzzles do you really need to own? So puzzles from the library. I know some libraries have different like other things that you can take out, like little like nature explorer kits and things like that. Or like if your kid wants to go try fishing, some libraries will offer like a little kit that you can take to go do that, so you don't have to go buy all that stuff. The other thing was kind of, I guess, the idea around the digital strewing. So I think I shared with you guys, I don't know if I wrote it in the community or not. Maybe I just shared it with you, Erin, but like we've been playing with that chat, I think it's Chat GPT app, where we've been using it mostly recently for like trivia, like question and answer. So I guess like a trivia activity, and we're just, and that was a free app that we found and we keep going back to and using for lots of different things. Like the other day I asked it to like write a poem about one of my kids in Minecraft or something, and it just very quickly does it. So it's very fun and very cool. And the or it'll write like a story, like write a short bedtime story for this kid, and this kid likes this. And that's been a lot of fun. But yeah, digital strewing. So sending or like yeah, I'm even thinking like getting movies from the library too. And then I'll just quickly mention like the other thing I've done is like I've pulled out like my old digital cameras for them to play with. I strewed those. I mean, once they're out, I guess. But I strewed those a couple years ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, I should have thought of that earlier. Like they were going around making like different videos and taking different pictures and stuff. And it was just something we already had that I didn't use anymore, so it was perfect. We did it with my old laptop from university. They can still like pull it out and actually type on it. It's all it can do. And then just the idea again of not strewing material items, but strewing ideas. Like, oh, I guess you could still, I was gonna say like the fort idea. So you could strew, like you could bring out like whatever materials for building a fort, but just stuff that you already have. Or like taking, like just thinking outside the box. And this is such a simple idea, but I strewed early on. My one kiddo played with like their little dinosaur figures a lot. And played with them like mostly in the living room. But one day I had this genius idea. I'm like, oh my gosh, let's bring them out into the snow. And he played with that for so long. Just like the dinosaur toys in the snow was something new. And we've also taken them to the beach too. So that's fun. So just like it doesn't have to be big and complicated. Like it can just be really little simple things like that. And yeah, you definitely don't have to spend a lot of money.
I love the idea of taking something they're already enjoying and just change. So you're just changing the environment, not the item.
Yeah.
A whole new thing.
Yeah, it was.
A whole new habitat.
Yes.
I had a lot of similar ideas to you guys, and I'm a big thrifter as well. So especially as the kids were little, finding books and puzzles and games and wooden toys, to bring new enriching things into the environment through the thrift store. And we also had a membership for a few years at a lending library that was through Child Reach, as a program here. And it was actually, so there was one connected to the play center where you could rent out toys, puzzles, and games. And then there was a whole learning center upstairs that was more for teachers. And so for $30 for the whole year, we could go every 2 weeks and get multiple bins and kits that were themed or STEM toys or wooden toys or just really cool things and light tables, just lots of things that are pricier items that, because my kids didn't go to school, wouldn't have access to. So I just loved being part of that program. And then down in the, I could also bring home two larger toy items or puzzles and games. So that was an amazing program. So looking to see if there's any kind of those lending libraries around might be something to look into. And for us, it's a lot of the invitations to join in on things. So helping cook dinner. Do you want to come bake with me? Things you're already doing as part of your household. It can even be, I'm cleaning out this closet. Interested in helping? Let's go wash the car. Like little invitations to do things you're already doing that bring connection and are fun and build relationships. Going on bike rides, trips to the library, trips to the pool in town, walks in the woods, things like that. And definitely the digital stuff. I have two folders in my Instagram, for instance, where I save different things for both my kids. My son loves anything hilarious, animal or cute, animal related. And my daughter, I often save like environmental, look at the good stuff happening in the world, those types of things. Or she's really into birding, so birding content. And then when I've accumulated 4, 5, 6 of them and we have a moment, I'll be like, hey, come see what I've saved for you. And we look at it together. And then like I mentioned, podcasts are free. And we found so many that we enjoy or that I think one member of our family will enjoy, and I'll strew it for them. And then I have created a playlist for my daughter. And so I'm always, she plays violin. She loves Celtic music. So if I come across a song, I'm like, ooh, this is the perfect song for her. I'll add it to her list. And then I'll check in with her. Oh, did you like that one or did you delete it? Oh, I loved that one. But she does curate it. It doesn't have to stay that way if she doesn't resonate with the song I've chosen for her. So I love all those digital elements that are free as well. And often shows as well. I don't think you guys mentioned that, but like I mentioned the Wishbone show. So there's been a few over the years where, and it's often that I'm seeing other parents saying this was a really good fit for our family. So then I can introduce it and just say, oh, give one episode a try and we'll see if we like it. And so we found some great shows over the years that are all either on YouTube for free or, maybe on a streaming system that we have already. So yeah, so those are good too. But yeah.
I love those, Kendall. And I did forget. Yeah, shows have been a big thing for us too. Like even things that, again, my husband loves to kind of share things that he's interested in and from his past. And so we've watched like, you know, several seasons of The Twilight Zone and then like old, you know, I don't know, like slapstick comedy, like Laurel and Hardy type stuff, like just so many different things. And now, I mean, a lot of it's even contemporary stuff. We're into a game show. We do a lot of stuff with my mother-in-law. So we both watch it at the same time. And then we do a debrief call after. So we'll both like watch a game show and try to answer the questions. And then she'll call afterward. And I know I said that was my last thing, but it actually brings me to another thought, which is like being open to the outside of the family opportunities and strewing. So my mother-in-law is amazing at, and again, it's, they're not thinking they're strewing. Like this isn't the language that she's using. But often like my husband will come home from her place with just different magazines and my mother-in-law will have put like little sticky notes on certain pages. And she'll be like, Lana, I think you'd enjoy this. Or, you know, Erin, I think you'd enjoy this. And in fact, both the wildlife group that my daughter's part of and the birding opportunity, not the birding opportunity, but the wildlife piece that came out of a magazine that she, like she'll recycle. If she's finished her magazine, she passes them on. And so just really being open to what people outside of our family might, you know, pass on or have ideas about. I would say too, like my kids have done, like being open to accepting invitations. So she would do like baking days with them and embroidery so that it's just stuff that I'm not necessarily doing that day. But baking with me is going to be different from baking with her. Well, very different because she's an excellent baker and she does cake decorating and everything. Right. So it's a whole different experience. So I just really like to remember that it, you know, it doesn't have to all be about us. We can see what our spouses bring to the table, see what our, you know, maybe extended family or even neighbors. Ashley, didn't you have something cool happen with a neighbor recently?
Yeah. Oh, that was like such a pleasant surprise. And yeah, she, our neighbor, I guess the kids have been outside at some point and kind of, I don't know, we have like a spot where they bring home nature a lot less these days, but we have a spot where they would put like different special sticks and rocks and, you know, the different things that they found. And I think it got brought up. And both my kids, my eldest has like a bigger collection of like gemstones, but they don't both do. And gemstones and like sea glass or beach glass. And I guess they had mentioned it to our neighbor and she just showed up at our door one day and she had put together two containers. So like one for each kid with sand and not just sand from here, but sand from like a trip she had been on. So she's talking about like how it feels different and stuff. And she had put like little, like hidden little like gemstones. And I think one had like a they each had like one fossil or something in it too. And she's like, oh, and it was rainy that day. And she thought, oh, I put these together because they mentioned that they like gemstones. And I thought, you know, keep them busy for a little bit for you. And I thought that is just so thoughtful. And the kids, like, I mean, they loved it. It was great for them. And we hadn't done something like that in a while either. So yeah, it brought out all the books and their collections and it became a whole thing. And I just thought that was so thoughtful of her. And I was excited because I'm like, oh my gosh, my next door neighbor just strewed for my kids. And I mean, I don't know that she's ever heard of the term strew. So, but I think it is so relatable to so many people. And it makes me think like what we were saying at the beginning, like about how it's about connection and how we connect with other people. And so we obviously don't just connect with our own family, but yeah, it can be neighbors or community members. And it's like what you wrote about, Erin, about how it's making the other person feel seen. And I think some people are just more naturally good at that. I don't actually even know if I'm naturally good at that. I want to be. And I mean, I guess I put effort in that area. But my mother-in-law, she just notices and pays attention and picks up to what other people are into or what they're interested in and shows up with stuff. And I just have always thought like that's so thoughtful and so like, I don't know, observant, I guess. But it really does for a lot of people or I like it strengthens that connection. So yeah. There's so much more to it.
Yeah, exactly. Do either of you have anything else? Kendall, was there anything else in your mind or your...
No, just thanks so much for this amazing conversation. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And well, I feel like we have a bunch of stuff to link at the bottom. So this was good. Lots of ideas. Okay. See you later.
Thanks.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. Erin can be found at Everlearning, and I, Ashley, can be found on Instagram at AshleyAsMama and at Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.